Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Back third hour of the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Randy Tobler in the big chair for the big guy. And we're giving him a little well-deserved time off here. And we talked about it earlier. I hope Mark is having his smoke-a-thon for the turkey for tomorrow. Maybe it's like a whole 24-hour luscious bird that he's making. I don't know. We'll have to talk with Mark about that. Joining us now, Charmaine Yost, Vice President and Institute for Family, Community, and Opportunity at the Heritage Foundation. How you doing, Charmaine? Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Mark. Good morning. Or Mark. Sorry. Randy. Randy. Nice to meet you and happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to meet you. And I really honor all that you've done throughout your career. And it's good to get to know you. And hopefully we can explore a lot of things in our time together today. Because I know you are families first and always, right? That's your mantra, right?
That a family, community, and opportunity, and we think that's the way to go. So, it's a great thing to talk about here for Thanksgiving as people are getting together and honoring their families and spending time together.
Right. Hey, now you just heard that John Kerry clip, and aren't you glad to hear as a mom and a wife and a mom of three children, right? And, all of them athletic. You have like the idyllic, Norman Rockwell family from all that I can tell. And here you are at the Institute for Family, Community, and Opportunity. And John Kerry just said that Biden is going to try to protect the unborn. He said, Biden will trust in God and science to guide our work on earth to protect God's creation. What an exclusive scoop we have this morning on the Mark Cox Morning Show, Charmaine. Oh, he wasn't talking about protecting the unborn, was he?
Yeah, apparently that's a separate category. Hey, listen, I tell you, when my kids are beaning each other with rolls on Thanksgiving, I'm going to tell them they're supposed to be being idyllic. So.
No, but isn't it interesting now suddenly when it comes to climate change, apparently now we're going to appeal to God. So we're selectively appealing traditional, Judeo-Christian values in this country. Whereas I think we'd all admit that on the left and on the progressive left, policies have not generally trended to support those kind of families first values. I mean, it's interesting now when it comes to climate change, now we're going to invoke God. Whereas, I mean, going back to Obama, and Biden was a part of that administration, us knuckle-dragging would-be penultimate Trump supporters were knuckle-dragging, Bible-toting, gun-toting Christians, So interesting. Now, God is important when it comes to climate change. Interesting turnaround, isn't it?
Well, you're hitting on something that's really important to me, which is that I think it's essential that we move into a phase where we can have conversations about policy without slandering people across the table. It's like, it's always been, if you want to engage in a conversation about what the science says about climate change, all of a sudden you're a climate denier, you're anti-science, and you're completely unable to have a conversation around that. And you started out with talking about abortion and the life issue. It's exactly the same thing. The minute you want to talk about, hey, what does science say about life and when life begins? And the minute you do that, it's like, oh, well, you're against women. I mean, I've spent my entire career being called a traitor against my gender. And so it's like once you start to go against any kind of liberal canard like that, all of a sudden the epithets of anti-science start coming out.
Right. No, you're right. And, I have I was talking with Senator Talent the other day. We're gonna play that interview on my Saturday morning show this week, and we were talking beforehand about the fact that I have tweeted at Joe Biden, and I have no expectation of getting anything back, but I've tweeted to other people on the left who are appealing for unity and healing after they denigrated and called those of us who supported Trump's policies, even though I was a vocal Trump policy supporter, though not a supporter of his demeanor or his mannerisms, frankly, most of them, in terms of his bellicose and braggadocious style. I just, that's not the way I roll, and I that's not the way I'd want my children or you know, best friend to roll, you know? That said, boy, we've just spent 4 years as people supporting deregulation, lower taxes, America first, you know, on and on, no endless wars. We've endured 4 years of persecution as being racists and bigots and xenophobes. And before that, with Barack Obama, if you didn't support a Barack Obama policy, you were a racist because he happens to be black. And now people appealing for unity and healing, and they want an olive branch from us after we've been beaten up by them for no good logical reason, rhetorically. I'm having a hard time. I want an apology. I want them to say, hey, wait a minute, we were wrong. We persecuted Donald Trump based on false innuendo, false dossiers, etc. I don't see any humility, any contrition on the part of the left, and yet they want us to give and give and give. And that tends to be the conservative style, right? We tend to be humble people. We don't think we have all the answers. We appeal to a higher authority for our answers. You know where I'm going with this. Do you sense any unity is going to happen until someone on the left wants to blink? Maybe we were a little over the top.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that I even went into politics is because, speaking of Thanksgiving, is I grew up in a family where we had really lively and interesting conversations about policy and the big issues and the big questions of, you know, what is life, even the big metaphysical questions. And I think it's important for people to important and fun and interesting. And but now they're pushing it to the cancel culture where you can't just disagree. You've got to get online and make sure that people can't be employed. All so you see some of the same people who are calling for unity turning around and saying that if, for example, you believe in traditional marriage, you shouldn't be able to be employed even. And right. So that's, I think, where you're seeing a lot of people being very, very concerned about their First Amendment rights, their rights of freedom of religion and association, to be able to attend the church that reflects their spiritual values.
And we're seeing a lot of hypocrisy, and you know, it's been chronicled throughout the whole election season with the COVID paralleling that and coinciding with it, that you know, it's okay to have a mass BLM or Antifa rallies that turn into riots and other gatherings, and you know, it's okay to celebrate the Biden assumed victory here. But it's not okay for people to gather in churches. I mean, I saw on one of the news channels this morning, a pastor out in California is again challenging, the rules, the lockdowns. That selective dismissal of our traditional religious roots just out of hand by the left, whether it's a governor or whether it's a president, you know, really is very troubling to me. I don't see that changing in a Harris-Biden administration. And I said it in that order on purpose, by the way. Harris Biden.
Exactly. I think that's what's troubling people is this move to demonize and characterize differing political / religious values as being outside the norm and defining discrimination in extremist kinds of ways, so that it's an attempt to shut down any kind of opposing viewpoints, and that's very, very troubling. And the problem is they put their kind of patronizing hat on, and mm-hmm. and say it in and cast any kind of disagreement as being divisive and as you said, often racist.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with Charmaine Yost, and I'm having the pleasure of meeting Charmaine over the airwaves here for the first time. I always listen to you with Mark, and I've been envious that I haven't been able to talk to you. Well, there, now I finally have my chance to. You know, Charmaine, I'm worried about moral relativism, and I'm worried about that slippery slope where we're in this cultural evolution. I think it's a devolution. And you're seeing this with a downtick, and forget about COVID, but it's gotten worse with COVID, a downtick in church attendance, a downtick in general religiosity among people. Actually, people who are religious are called, again, well, you know, faith is just, and that was the communist slogan, right? Didn't Marx say that that's just that's the way people, you know, soothe their souls, you know, artificially? Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, when you don't have any higher universal conscience called a higher being, and I don't want to parse it into, oh, the Lutherans have it right, the Catholics have it right, the Episcopalians or the Unitarian, you know, I'm not going to go there. But as our country has pretty much become more humanistic and depending on self and government as our, you know, as our go-to conscience and authorities, I think the things are going off the rails. And this is why now we see, you know, transgenderism being encouraged by parents of 6 and 7 year olds. It's as though there is no moral truth. My truth is my truth. Your truth is your truth. And let's call the whole thing off. And this troubles me because it guides policy. And when that infiltrates the academy, that infiltrates then K-12 education, I don't know. I see anarchy at some point. I see anarchy. What say you?
Well, picking up on your point about the churches, I one of the things that I think is deeply troubling is, you know, we're in a difficult spot right now with this winter surge in the coronavirus cases, and many businesses really, really having a hard time toughing it out. In the midst of all of that, you have a similar kind of crisis going on in the church with many people still not feeling being in a category of risk where they don't feel like they can, you know, some churches have opened back up again. I have a church where you can reserve a spot and they do social distancing. So there's churches who have done really creative and innovative things to keep their congregations going. And I was super optimistic in the beginning because people were responding so well to the online and the virtual gatherings. But I think the longer this goes on, I think it's a particular challenge for churches to maintain community, maintain cohesiveness. But let me pivot to, I'm always going to be the optimist. And I'm convinced that on the economic front, You saw this fall a real roaring back of the engines of productivity in the American economy. So I think that there's a lot of positive developments on the horizon in terms of, you know, with the vaccines and the therapeutics. I think there's a lot of good news, and I think the economy will respond to that. And I think the corollary is true in the spiritual realm as well, that whenever you go through a time of challenge and crisis and even darkness that we've experienced this year, I believe that people of faith will rally to that. I believe that there have been plenty of times in world history where darkness has been followed by great awakenings. And so I'm just going to be interested to see how the church responds. And I'm optimistic that there will be great leadership that comes out of this.
I hope so. And it's incumbent on us, those of us with faith, not to be hateful and not to be guilty of what we disdain on the moral humanist side, right, which is personal demonization. And it's, you know, trying to meet people where they're at and making common sense, good faith arguments. I think of the Ravi Zacharias apologetics movement and others like him.
Right.
I think we'd be better informed as Christians to share our story that way. And maybe this Thanksgiving time over the Zoom table is a way to proceed. In the last minute and a half we have, do you find it curious? I'd like you to react to the left's, whether it's Cuomo or others who are crunching down here in St. Louis County, crunching down on people that are resisting bar and restaurant shutdowns for indoor dining and other behaviors and, you know, snitch on your neighbor. Isn't it funny that they resist? They're going to prosecute civil disobedience by bar and restaurant owners who are going belly up and their staff can't put food on their own tables. But yet they celebrated Martin Luther King, rightfully so, for gaining equal rights. It's funny that they can't see the parallels there. What say you?
Well, I think as we head into this Thanksgiving season, and as we are without a doubt seeing an increase in the cases, and I think we have to have a common sense approach. people do need to be careful and to follow the recommendations of social distancing and wearing a mask and not going to large gatherings. At the same time, we can't overcorrect and head back into the failed policies of lockdowns and keeping our schools shut down indefinitely. There is a common sense approach forward. We do know so much more about this virus. And so, you know, going to either extreme of lockdowns or you know, just throwing the doors open and saying, hey, you know, we're just going to sail out there. Neither one of those is the right approach. There is a common sense middle ground.
Well, there you go. That's a good wrap. Wisdom from Charmaine Yost. Just pure wisdom, which is knowledge and experience and clear thinking. Thanks, Charmaine. Great to meet you.
Great
Hope we can connect again. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
And happy Thanksgiving. Okay. There she is, Charmaine Yost. We'll be back at the bottom of the hour and take some calls and continue here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. Tobler in for Mark. We'll be back.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
You are listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show, and you're listening to Randy Tobler in for Mark on this day before Thanksgiving. Hope that you have a great and glorious Thanksgiving, even though it'll be a little bit modified in format for most, or many of us anyway, this year. There's a way to make it all make sense and still give thanks for the bounty that still is this country's unique gift to the world through our constitutional Republican government, small r Republican form of government. 314-241-9797, 866-455-9797. In case you didn't hear, John Kerry said Biden will trust in God and science to guide our work on earth to protect God's creation. And so there you go. The Biden administration will be against abortion. Not really. He was talking about climate change, but aren't the preborn innocents that are snuffed out with a suction tube inserted into a pregnant uterus, aren't they part of God's creation? I think they are. Those on the left think they aren't. We like to talk about the small, the easygoing issues, right, Carl? Carl, thank you, by the way, for Carl, the intern, is in.
Yes, sir.
And on the board today, and Trisha's in the background helping and producing as well. Shay Lynn taking your calls. And, of course, we have Brian doing the news. Feldman. So, Carl, you've played a couple of my bumper music and the Bill Withers tune. Thank you for doing that.
I have played The Rascals, and I have played Kenny Loggins. And in the 8 o'clock hour, I will be playing the Bill Withers as we go out.
Okay.
Because that's what happens on Saturdays.
Thank you. Yes.
I've paid attention.
And I hope you guys will tune in on Saturday. I'm doing Annie's show on this Friday as well. So hopefully you guys can tune in for that. All right. So let's take some phone calls. And let's talk with Lynn on line one first, and then Richard on line three. Go ahead, Lynn.
Morning. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Same to you.
Oh, good. I just had a question. One, what is the determination for a doctor putting a patient who has been diagnosed with COVID-19 into the hospital? And then two, I have another one. Are hospitals being under Medicare, I guess it would be under the CARES Act, being paid extra for every COVID death? Am I reading that right?
Well, hospitals get when they are taking care of COVID patients. You see, there are categories of diagnoses called DRG, diagnosis related groups. And when you come into the hospital with a pneumonia or a kidney infection or an exacerbation of COPD or, you know, whatever your diagnosis is, Medicare assigns a certain value that they're going to give for that particular diagnosis. Now, if you have other comorbidities with that, you can get a little bit extra for that. But basically, let's say Lynn is pretty healthy and she comes in with a regular run-of-the-mill pneumonia. Forget about COVID. Okay, you know, the hospital is told, all of the hospitals in St. Louis, except for maybe a couple of nearby and outlying areas, the critical access hospitals that are safety net hospitals, but the vast majority of hospitals that we talk about in general and we attend are are paid on a prospective payment system, meaning Lynn comes in, she's got pneumonia, and unless something else is going on, the hospital is going to get a flat rate for that, and they have to make it work, which is why oftentimes utilization coordinators and others are bugging doctors to get people out of the hospital quicker, because we've got to make a little margin on this, because if we, you know, if the average expectation of a stay for diagnosis X is 3 days, and, you know, so many x-rays and so many lab tests and so many IVs and so many antibiotics, they have sort of averages, and that's how they compute what the hospital will get paid, really. And then, and so if that's a 3-day stay with, you know, all the other resources that are on average, and they can use fewer resources and get Lynn out quicker, they make a little money. And if Lynn stays longer, they lose a little money, right? Well, they figure because COVID is so unpredictable and so traumatic and so destructive in selected cases, the government has said, look, we're gonna just make that an automatic upcharge for taking care of, or if there's a death in those patients, you know. Now, look, doctors are not lying. They're not being told by administrators, hey, wink, wink, make sure you code for COVID. There are strict rules when a doctor has to fill out a death certificate. And so that's, I mean, I tell you, there were very few times I disagreed with Donald Trump, but I was livid. I was so livid, and I didn't put it on the air, but I can say it now. I was so angry at him, implying that doctors are somehow cooking the books to get more money for COVID patients. When he said that before the election, I almost voted for someone else. I was that angry, because that's just not the case, Lynn. Look, okay. If you've got COVID and you die of something else, but you have COVID, that may go on the death certificate. It won't go as the if you die of a motorcycle accident and they find out that you have COVID, no doctor in their right mind is going to risk their license or their board certification to say, oh, this was a COVID death, even though the guy's brain was a smashing pumpkin with a motorcycle accident. That's just not going to happen. Doctors don't do that.
That's not good. Okay. I'm doing my pumpkins now. Don't talk to me about brain.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, smashing pumpkin.
Okay. So the second one was, what is the delineating factor that would send a person to a hospital or versus keep them home? Can they not be oxygenated at home if they're having problems breathing? I mean, why are there so many admissions with COVID-19?
Well, there are admissions because if your oxygen saturation, you know, that little red thing that they put on your finger,
right, my husband had pneumonia.
To measure the oxygen
saturation. Yeah.
If that falls below a certain level, and then, you know, you're designated as severe, and then you get admitted. Other people that are less, they may not meet that criteria. The criteria are either you have a rapid heart rate, a rapid breathing rate, you know, you have COVID, plus one of the following. You have to have rapid breathing, you have to have more than 50% of a whiteout on your chest x-ray, or you have to have an O2 saturation below a certain level, right? But there are people that maybe have underlying conditions that don't quite meet those criteria, but yet they're ill, and they're ill enough to keep a close eye on. What we're finding is that people will be admitted to the hospital because they're struggling to breathe. They need some supplemental oxygen. Maybe they have one or two or three other, cofactors going on in their health. And they'll do well for 3, 4, 5 days. And then all of a sudden, over the course of just a few hours, I mean, they fall off the cliff. And they just go downhill much more rapidly than you'd see with, you know, a standard bacterial pneumonia or a viral pneumonia. And that's why it's important to keep an eye on folks closely. And especially if people don't have caretakers at home, or if they're socio demographically disadvantaged, you got to keep an eye on people, because they can go downhill so quickly. And by the time they get back in the hospital, they get put on a ventilator, and that's a problem. So at any rate, hope that helps delineate things. We'll be talking about more of that on this show and on Annie's show on Friday and on my show later on, too. Thanks a lot. Okay, thanks, guys, for being with me. Yeah, we're going to be plenty busy. You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Randy Tobler, along with the whole gang, because I need the whole gang to keep me straight. We'll be back after the break, and we'll do our first responder spotlight.
This is your first responder spotlight.
In the entire month of November, we'll be honoring our police officers, firefighters, EMTs, and, of course, we're raising awareness. Boy, they're under so much siege these days, and we're saying thank you to area first responders for the difficult jobs they do every day. You know, they're putting their lives on the line to serve and protect our communities. Make sure you support the Backstoppers. You can donate or volunteer at backstoppers.org. That's backstoppers.org. As you know, they provide ongoing financial assistance and support to the spouses and dependent children of all fighters, police officers, firefighters, and volunteer firefighters. The publicly funded paramedics and EMTs in our coverage area have lost their lives in the line of duty. Fabulous, fabulous organization. As you know, all philanthropic organizations are really struggling with the COVID thing and keeping their coffers full so that they can benefit the beneficiaries that they serve. So learn more at 971talk.com/first responders. And our spotlight today is on the Ladue Police Department. Chief Ken Andreski sent us some information. I guess we could say the roots of the Ladue Department went back to the town marshal of the three villages of Ladue, Deer Creek, and McKnight back in 1929. So we're talking, 91 years, right? And then it's evolved to where, of course, the new Ladue Police Department commenced duties in 1931. It's a fabulous organization out there. Only 12%, less than 12% of the traffic tickets are written for violations unrelated to safety. Big shout out for that. It sounds like they're not a quota-driven organization there. They're looking out for safety. They focus on speeding, reckless driving, rolling stops, and driving under the influence. So they maintain their original commitment to the citizens of Ladue and provide the highest quality of police protection with the greatest integrity. Hats off to the Ladue Police Department on our first responders spotlight today. Randy Tobler in for Mark Cox and taking your phone calls, 314-241-9797, 866-455-9797. Speaking of police and sheriffs and law enforcement people, we're seeing reported in the St. Louis Most Detached today. That's a Post-Dispatch, sorry, it's a Freudian slip. Several cease and desist letters have gone out to resisting bars and restaurants and other businesses that have resisted Sam Page's draconian, tyrannical ruling and mandate of a week or so ago. Really pretty much shutting things down, limiting strictly, no indoor dining, on and on and on. In St. Charles, there's been a 5 p.m. curfew now put on bars. I read this morning out in Pennsylvania, for instance, they're banning alcohol sales after 5 because this is one of the busiest days in the pubs around the country on the evening before Thanksgiving. Did you know that, Carl? Do you normally hit the bar the evening before Thanksgiving?
No, doctor. I'm actually normally at Guns N' Hoses, which they were going to do, but then they're not doing it anymore.
That occurred to me, I guess, yeah. So that's another reason to get behind the Backstoppers.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm curious if you're in law enforcement. I don't know, Carl. Can you somehow modify the voice with one of those gravelly, voice modification devices? If someone calls in, I just wonder. I've been speculating. These water cooler conversations. Will police officers actually go and arrest a restaurant owner who has, 7 patrons in their cafe? I'm just wondering, will that actually happen?
First, someone has to complain. The police have to be called first. So
I understand, but the public health officials are sending out letters, so they know that these places are open, or else they wouldn't send a cease and desist order. So somehow, what's her name, Spring Schmidt? Her mug was on the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and she's sent out all these dozens of letters. I don't know. This is going to be an interesting citizen versus the government fight. The government pays. Everything's about saving COVID lives, And obviously, look, I've watched people die. I've participated in their care and in the codes that unfortunately aren't successful all the time. On the other hand, I've watched people not get routine medical care. I've treated psychiatric illness that's going crazy because of lockdowns and lost businesses and bankruptcy and impending bankruptcy and people that now don't know what to do because they can't feed their family because their former employer at the small business is closed. And I'm just wondering if this could really come to a fevered pitch. And again, I ask, it's a parallel question. Do you think the cops or the military or whoever are going to come back? One of the people that Biden is touting for one of his cabinet positions, is it the DHS guy? I think it may be the DHS guy. There was a clip from a couple years ago when he was open to gun confiscation, so-called buybacks. A mandatory gun buyback is a confiscation. And first of all, it's not a buyback because you didn't buy it from the government in the first place. So it's a confiscation. It's like an eminent domain. Suddenly your gun has become an eminent domain and the government this time is taking it and they're going to give you a little something in return for your gun. Our police officers, our sheriffs, our deputies, our potentially the military, the National Guard, are those great patriots? And I never have known a military or a first responder or a law enforcement official who isn't a great, great patriot. Are they really going to infringe on our Second Amendment rights? Are they going to infringe on our rights of assembly, on our rights to walk outside of our house without a mask? According to Sam Page, you can't do that. You step foot onto your porch and, oh, you're in violation. King Page says you can't wear you have to wear a mask the minute you step out of your door. Now, I'm the same guy that says that we need to have respect for the virus, just like we need to have respect for one another. And neither should we leave in fear, nor should we be reckless about our behavior. I'm perfectly clear about that. I've been consistent from day one. And so I'm not saying that we shouldn't show respect to one another, that we shouldn't wear a mask to prevent thee from me. It doesn't protect me very effectively, but it protects thee from me spreading it if I'm pre or asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic. I don't know. Well, that's it. That wraps it for this hour, and I've run late. Carl's angry at me now. If he lets me, I'll be back next hour. See you then.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.